Welcome, everybody. This is episode 35 of the Academy of Management Review Origin Series, the series in which we try and take you behind the scenes in terms of understanding what does it take to write, to develop, to prepare, to revise an Academy of Management Review article. For many, many people, this can sometimes be a bit of a mystical or unknown process. And so we try and make it more concrete, more real, and more understandable. And today I'm going to be talking with Margaret Schaeffer, and she's got a paper with Victor Lau called A Typological Theory of Domestic Employees' Acculturation Stress and Adaptation in the Context of Globalization. So by the sounds of things, this is a paper focused on the global village in which we live and people living in different places and moving to different places. And we'll get into the nuance of what this paper's about and what it's taken to develop it in a moment. But for now, Margaret, can you just introduce yourself a little bit about who you are, where you're at, what your research identity is at, and then a little bit about your relationship with Victor and his connection with this paper.
Sure. Thank you, Greg. As Greg mentioned, I'm Dr. Margaret Schaeffer. I'm a chair professor, the Michael F. Price Chair of International Business at the Michael F. Price College of Business at the University of Oklahoma. So I am based here in Norman, Oklahoma, and I've been here now for about 7 years. Prior to that, I was in Wisconsin at the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee. And before that, I was in Hong Kong, where I was a professor there for 11 years. And it's in Hong Kong that I actually met Victor Lau, my co-author on this paper, and who was actually the initial stimulus behind this paper. It was his idea originally. But I met Victor, he was a master's student in one of my classes there, and I convinced him to do a PhD. So he was actually my first PhD student that I've ever supervised. So I am definitely extremely proud of having had this opportunity to work with him on this paper. We had worked with each other on other projects in the past, but doing a conceptual paper was something very different for both of us.
Awesome. And that's a little bit about what we want to understand here is what are some of those differences and how did you work together to bring this paper to fruition? And what a great outcome for someone doing a PhD to work with their advisor and for both of you to get this outcome. So congrats. Can you give us a sort of brief explanation of what this paper is about, what the essence of it is, and what the message is within the paper?
Yeah, sure. In the past, it was really only global employees who suffered from what we refer to as culture shock, because they go to live and work in an alien culture abroad. So they're exposed to a lot of cultural differences. But today, in the context of globalization, local employees face similar problems only in their own country. So for global employees, culture shock that arises from these different environmental stressors is anticipated. But nevertheless, it can result in different occupational diseases, such as physiological impairments, psychological distress, and cultural alienation. Compared with global employees, these acculturation and adaptation problems can be more extensive and severe for local employees because they are the majority of the workforce and they're not mentally prepared for the changes wrought by globalization. Global employees are mentally prepared when they go overseas because they know they're going to experience something different. So local employees may experience even more stress as they're compelled to adapt to a changing and alien culture where what was once familiar has now become unfamiliar. So the cost of this ignorance and this invisible and under-theorized phenomenon is what we call non-trivial. At worst, local employees who were once very adept and performed well can now be marginalized in the workplace causing individual, organizational, as well as societal problems.
So to boil that down, is that the notion that there are employees based in their home country, as you call them, domestic employees, and as the world opens up, they're exposed to and have to grapple with new cultures in their home setting, and it's the difficulty of actually grappling with that you're theorizing.
Exactly. Yes. I mean, just think back about all the technological changes we've experienced over the last couple of decades. Also, our workplaces have become much more multicultural and diverse as well. So they're no longer as homogenous as what they once were, which brings about more challenges.
Yeah. So people go into work and they aren't necessarily as comfortable with some of the norms of the way other people are going to interact with them or what the expectations may be of them. I get that. And I can see that how that could raise new challenges. So it's sort of like it's the notion of differences in culture, but how we might experience those actually in our home country, or one might experience those. So who's the target audience for this paper? Who should be reading it? What kind of scholars are going to find this intriguing and interesting? And how might it have relevance even beyond the scholarly community, I guess?
I think it's really relevant to a range of management scholars, strategy, human resource management, as well as organizational behavior scholars. Can all benefit from this. And of course, international business scholars as well. It's also relevant to the other stakeholders involved in this process. So the domestic employees themselves, as well as the organizations that are also exposed to these cultural changes brought about by globalization and that continue to evolve and change and experience the stress associated with that.
Yeah, one of the things I noticed about what you're doing is that there is very much this multi-level kind of theorization going on, that globalization is happening at the global or the upper sort of external environments, but then part of where these interfaces are happening or these interactions are happening is at the organizational level. But then people are experiencing, it might be some of the stress or some of the issues at the individual level. So it's clear that you're operating across multiple different levels as you think about these different things. Was that a challenge to have to sort of grapple with multiple levels as you theorize? Was that something that came naturally? Talk to us a little bit about theorizing across so many different levels.
I would say actually it came naturally, but that was one of the big pushbacks that we had from the reviewers, was that we were trying to do too much because we were trying to theorize across all of these different levels. So they encouraged us to really focus on more just the organizational and the individual level. So we had to reposition this concept of globalization as more of an exogenous environmental force that was affecting the organizations and the local employees.
So prior versions of the paper had even more going on at the global, at the external yes. level, the globalization level, and you scaled back through the,
yes.
Okay, that makes sense. and it's actually something we've heard quite consistently in some of these interviews is that the tendency through the review process is that one's got to do less and cut back in order to try and go deep enough and to try and articulate one's ideas clearly enough. So that sort of resonates. Can you take us a little bit back? So you mentioned that you and Victor had worked in a sort of a relationship of student, PhD student, graduate student, and advisor in the past. But the genesis of this project, how did it get started in the first place? What was sort of got it going? And then how did it evolve from its initial genesis?
Yeah, well, actually, I was visiting Hong Kong in December of 2017, and Victor and I got together and had lunch. when we started talking about the fact that we weren't currently working on anything together, and we missed that. So we started throwing around some ideas that first we started looking at past ideas that we had talked about, but never really developed. And then we threw out some other ideas, but we went back to this idea that we had talked about several years prior and thought, maybe this is something we can really develop, because it does draw on a lot of our experiences, my experiences as an expatriate, and also that's my major area of research is on global employees and globally mobile employees, and Victor's own personal experience. But much of his research has been in the area of entrepreneurship, which entrepreneurs always face a lot of uncertainty and ambiguity in their lives, which is very similar to what we're saying happens with global employees as well as local employees who are suddenly faced with all of these changes that sort of creep up on them. It makes everything less clear in their jobs. So we decided—
So it was an idea that had been somewhat— You sort of had some idea, it had been somewhat dormant, and so you connect again in 2017, and there's a spark there. Was there anything in particular that sort of gave you the impetus or the motivation to say, okay, now is the time?
I think just that we hadn't had a project that we were working on, and also the changes that we were experiencing. I guess living in Hong Kong, it's such a cosmopolitan city, but it's also a center of change and evolution. It's been going through so many changes with the handover back to China and everything, that we were witnessing a lot of those changes and how that was influencing people there. And so it became obvious, and we thought, well, you know, Hong Kong is not the only one experiencing these changes. So we thought we would theorize about this and expand it to include the rest of the world, if you will.
Awesome. So you've alluded to the idea that some of your thinking and evolution of your ideas comes from your own experiences, Victor's experiences, and how you've experienced certain things living all over the world. But then there's also, it's a conceptual paper, it's gone into a top theoretical journal. So there's also the notion that you have to incorporate and bring in theoretical ideas. Can you talk to us a little bit about marrying what you're experiencing and how you're then drawing on or developing or evolving theoretical ideas from the literature in which you're embedded, and how you make that work?
It was challenging. This was probably the first theoretical paper that I've really done beyond any theorizing I did in other papers that have been empirical, really, for the most part. Victor was actually, his undergraduate degree was as a journalist major. So he was very good at telling stories and writing and everything. So that part of it, I think, came very easy for him. I had a lot of knowledge about acculturation, that global people, immigrants, and global employees experience in that from my own research. So that in-depth knowledge of that area of research really contributed, I think, to our ability to tell this story.
And you land up with this overarching model, and then some fairly informative and powerful sort of 2x2 matrices that sort of unpack your core ideas. Did those come early in the process and then sort of guide your thinking, or did those sort of drop out as you developed the manuscript? You thought that's a good way to summarize everything.
That's really a great question. As in preparing for this conversation that we're having, I went back through the emails that Victor and I were exchanging over the years as we developed this manuscript. And so the very first model was one that we drew while having lunch at that restaurant in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
It was model number 70 that actually made it into the paper, into AMR. So it went through many, many changes.
Well, I'm glad you kept track of that, because I think that is an anecdote or a piece of information that's very valuable to those people who are on Model 25 and they think they're almost done and they're wondering why they're being asked to revise it again.
I know. And again. And again. Yes. So I know I always tell students, don't get married to any particular sentences or paragraphs you write, because you'll want to change those later. And that's true of our models also. So, you know, stay open and flexible. They will evolve and get better.
And so would, based on the fact that you had a model from the outset, would you argue that your model was guided, was a reflection of your thinking that you would then write about? And so it was sort of from the model to the narrative, and then as things change, you change the model and then reframe the narrative, or the opposite way around, just to help others who are trying to do this think, should I be working on my model, and or should I be writing up what I'm thinking and then drawing a model of that? Do you have any sort of advice or guidance, or at least reflection on your experience in that regard?
I think just talking through the model initially and getting that down, I like to see what I'm doing. So graphically having that depicted there really helps. And then we started developing the theory based on that model. But it was really an iterative process, as you mentioned. So we kept going back and forth from the model to theory, theory back to the model, and so on.
And then Margaret, you land up, I guess, coming back, you know, you come back to the United States, come back to Norman, and you're based there, and Victor's based across in Asia. What's your mode of collaboration and developing ideas? Did you find it useful to just send stuff back and forth, or was it better to figure out, you know, time zones and get online and talk to each other? Was it a combination of those things? Just for those people who find themselves working on conceptual papers, but in very different time zones, parts of the world, operating from a distance, what worked and didn't work for the two of you?
Mostly we communicated via email and sending documents back and forth. But once in a while, we would get together and have a conversation. Now I work with other research teams around the world, and some of them do better having those regular Zoom meetings where we talk through everything. For Victor and I on this project, though, it worked well just exchanging documents and commenting on each other's writing and thoughts and that. So,
and you had built up the relationship and the trust and the understanding of each other, so that probably helped facilitate that. But I just think it's useful to recognize that there are different ways of making teams work, and you got to sort of figure out what works for whoever the team is. So.
Yeah, and the time differences between Asia and here are a challenge also. So I would have to get up really early in the morning, and he would have to stay up late at night, or vice versa.
Yeah, just to catch each other. And so you've alluded to one of the things that changed from when you submitted to AMR and got some reviews, and they said, we like it, but we want less. We want you to cut some pieces of this out. Were there any other major changes through the review process? So as you went through the review process, that things that you either had to change or things that you learned based on the information that the reviewers or the editor were giving you?
Yeah, there were some minor changes, and then there were some major changes. So the minor changes, they didn't like our first title, so we had to change it. Although we tried to convince them that we liked our first title and why we thought it was a good one, but they still insisted that we change it. So we said, okay, it's okay, we'll change it.
What didn't they like about it, just out of interest? Or,
well, we had, we referred to Who Moved My Cheese in the title. Okay. And a couple of the reviewers felt that that was pretty dated. I said, "Oh, I'm dated too." So yes, I agree it is.
I remember having to read Who Moved My Cheese when I first joined Deloitte back in 1999. So that's dating me a little bit.
Exactly. Yes. So, but we thought it captured that idea of adaptation and change and everything really well.
Yeah.
But that's all right. We moved on and went beyond that. Yeah. We also, really the major change, as I mentioned, was having to condense the model, the theorizing, to bring it down to just the organizational and the individual level. And that was difficult because in essence, we wiped out the first half of our manuscript to do that. So we were left with half of a manuscript that then we had to develop in more depth. Which proved to be a good experience, but very challenging as well.
It's good in retrospect. While you're doing it, it feels somewhat painful. You feel like you're giving up stuff that's really, really good. And have you ever used the stuff you've cut out in elsewhere or referred to it elsewhere or been able to incorporate it in maybe another paper or in something else you've done?
We haven't yet, but that's a great idea. We had included it in a couple of conference presentations before we submitted it to AMR. And that was always helpful as well to get that feedback from those conferences, as well as from some colleagues who read through our work.
Yeah, because interestingly enough, one of my experiences of writing an AMR was exactly the same, that, you know, 2/3 of what you have done needs to be cut out and you need to go deeper on this piece. And we followed it to the T because we wanted to convince these reviewers that what we had was good. And after having submitted it and gone through the whole process, we looked at what was cut out and said, oh, there's a whole nother paper there. And in fact, it landed up getting published as a separate paper in another journal. But it is awesome. Worth revisiting those ideas at a later stage. What role influence did the editor have? I noticed that you gave Christina Gibson quite a nice acknowledgement in the paper. So what influence did she have on the paper? Was she just channeling the reviewer's concerns? Was she layering on anything else? I'd just love you to comment a little bit on that.
Yeah, she was awesome. She really, you could tell that she read the manuscript and was invested in it. She helped interpret the reviewer's comments and sort of navigate where there might have been differences of opinion between reviewers. And so she gave us some good guidance as to how to go about making changes, and so offered suggestions that the reviewers didn't necessarily offer, but she felt were important also and would help to improve the paper. My experience, I've been in academics now for almost 30 years. And so I've been through the review process a lot. This was the best experience that I have had in terms of the review team being developmental and constructive. So we felt very supported throughout, although it was obvious that not all the reviewers were in love with our paper. We found enough that loved it that we were able to get in. But it was very, very helpful from the feedback that we got from them.
That's good to know. I think one of the episodes I did a few sessions ago, she was also the editor, and the authors had very similar sort of positive sentiment on the influence that she had had. So she clearly does a great job as an editor, and that's good to hear.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about sort of the stage that this paper sets, or what impact you hope that it can have, either for your own work or for the work of others in terms of influencing whether it's future conceptual papers or future empirical research, or actually what people talk about in the MBA classroom or as practicing managers or even policy issues. So I'd love you to just elaborate on what you think, where you think things could go from what you've done and written.
Yeah, I think that one of the major impacts is that we have brought in conservation and resource theory and married it to the acculturation and adaptation literature. So that perspective, as far as we know, is new, and there's certainly room for more development in that area.
Can I just ask about that quickly? So did you arrive at conservation of resources as a sort of theoretical perspective early on? Was that sort of part of your initial conversation?
Yes.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yes, it was. So because we were looking for a good theoretical base and thought that this would work well. And it was a theory that both of us were familiar with. So we felt that it would really apply here.
Yeah, because that seemed to me like a really smart sort of combining of a theoretical idea into a domain or a context where it hadn't been applied before, but just made a whole lot of sense. So,
right.
So that's one of the things. What are some of the others that you think are promising future avenues or angles?
Okay, well, along that same line, I think because we are drawing on that resource perspective, that it does have practical implications for organizations as well, because they can make sure that their employees have those resources at hand that will help them to better adapt to some of these changes that are going on. I think another key contribution that we've made is by adopting this more typological process approach to theorizing instead of the more traditional variance, formal hypotheses approach that so many papers take. So that offers something novel.
And in a sense, I mean, one of the things as an AE that I'm often asked to do is to provide exemplars of certain types of papers. And one of the ones we struggle to find is this typological papers with this typological approach to theorizing. So for those listeners who are wanting to do more, do some variant of typological theorizing, this is a good paper to look at as an exemplar or example of that in practice.
Thank you. And we found that article back from 1994 by Doty and Glick that's often cited as well. And that was very helpful in our development of this paper also, because it is doing a typological model is a very different way of thinking. So I will hand it to Victor, who really seemed to intuitively grasp what a typological process is all about.
So awesome.
He helped me to understand that a little better also.
And so if you had a student or a junior colleague that came to you and said, "You've just gotten an AMR published. I'm thinking of doing an AMR. I've only ever done empirical work in the past. So I've had to theorize for the front end of empirical papers and had to do that. But now I want to give this a go." What three or four points of advice might you give a person in that position? And let's say they're more of an international business, international management person, because I don't think we've had a lot of people who've come from that sort of focus area on the podcast. What sort of advice would you give someone in that position?
I would encourage them to find a good research partner to work with. I think that really helps to be able to bounce these ideas off on someone else.
Yeah, because that's all you've got is your ideas. And so you need to be able to test them with someone else and talk through them. And that's how things develop. So that's a great piece of advice.
Right. And also to have some good in-depth knowledge about the topic, because you're going to be theorizing about things that many, many people have written about already, only maybe in a different context. So the more familiar you are with that content, the easier it's going to be for you to theorize about
and
that.
So if there is an area around which you're maybe less familiar, maybe it's conservation of resources or in your setting, or maybe it's something around the individual level of analysis that you haven't grappled with in the past, then the ramification from what you've said would be that that person either needs to find someone to work with who understands that, or go and read quite extensively and deeply to make sure they're not missing anything in that area.
Yeah. And I think in our case, at least, having the cultural diversity of our team helped also, because we would come at things with different perspectives. And that helped us, I think, to be a little more creative in thinking about all of this.
And work with someone who's a journalist, because they know how to write well and tell stories. And that always helps in a conceptual paper where you can't just lean back on the data.
Yeah, I know. I always tell my PhD students to take a creative writing course. Not all of them listen to me, but I think it would benefit people to study that.
Yeah, the whole notion of storytelling and narrative and making things come to life. I think often we don't emphasize that enough. Now, it doesn't need to become front and center of everything we do, but we also don't want to be so clinical and so precise that everything becomes boring and there's no actual golden thread or intuition or interesting aspects of what we're saying.
Yeah, you can have the best ideas in the world, but if you don't convey them and package those ideas well, no one's going to pay attention to them.
Well, Margaret, thank you for taking the time to just share some of the perspective of this paper with us. Thank you for putting in the time and effort into writing this paper, for providing us with an exemplar of typological theorizing, and for sharing the nuance and the backstory to what it took to do this. Much appreciated.
Thank you. I've enjoyed having this conversation. Appreciate it.